I want to give you just a little bit of background before we read the lesson from 1 Kings tonight. The prophet Elijah had shown quite clearly the power of God and also Elijah's faith in God. Elijah had ended an absolutely terrible drought, and then he lit a soaking wet altar covered with oxen into a raging fire, much to the dismay of the 450 prophets of Baal and Queen Jezebel. In accordance with the law at that time, Elijah then killed all 450 of the prophets, and now he was on the run for his life. He was then given strength by an angel, and he walked alone for 40 days through the desert wilderness from Beersheba to Mount Horeb, which was the same mountain where Moses received the Ten Commandments. For some 250 or so miles, he wandered through the wilderness, through the desert, and then he finally hid in a cave on the mountainside. And it was there that the voice of God found him. A reading from 1 Kings chapter 19. The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" We don't often experience the voice of God calling us out of a cave, but we do experience God's presence. A few years ago, I spent several days with a dear friend of mine. Her name was Rebecca, in her beach condo near Charleston. My dad had just died, and I was physically and emotionally exhausted from our time spent in the wilderness. And if you all have ever been caregivers, you know what that wilderness can look like. Rebecca's offer to get totally away from all people and all places, to spend time on the beach, to eat when I wanted, what I wanted, if I wanted, to binge on chick flicks, and to care for no one, even if only for a few days, turned out to be a real blessing to me. Rebecca had to drive into the city one day for some business, and since I had nothing else to do, I went with her. She dropped me off in the shopping district in Charleston. Rebecca is a real shopper, so this was a logical thing to do. I'm not. So I went in and out of a couple of stores, but instead I was drawn into a church that was tucked into a tiny little sliver of property in the midst of that shopping district. Fortunately, the sanctuary was open, so I went inside and I sat in one of the very well-worn pews. And I just sat in absolute silence and absolute solitude. I must have been there for hours because at some point my phone buzzed and it was Rebecca asking which store I was in. And I had to tell her that I was in a church and God was there too. Thomas Merton wrote that churches should always be left open for all to come in and find this kind of stillness, a place where your mind can be idle, forget its concerns, descend into silence and worship the Father in secret. This kind of silence is very, very different than sitting in your house with the TV turned off. Even a moment in the midst of a busy day or a normal worship service can give a space, even if a tiny space, for a holy and sacred encounter can open the door to the presence of God. I want you to think this week whether silence is awkward for you or whether it's an absolutely wondrous thing. Do you embrace silence or do you avoid it? Do you actively seek moments of silence, whether they're while you're waiting at the red light or whether you're waiting for the microwave oven to beep or your teapot to boil? How have you used these moments to notice God's presence? So often we expect God to come in the really big moments and big shows of presence, earthquakes and great winds and big fires. I always wish that God would drop a brick on my head, preferably inscribed with step-by-step directions with whatever it is that God wants me to do. Sometimes I don't have patience for this silence stuff. Unfortunately, God doesn't work that way. God told Elijah to go to the top of the mountain and wait. The top of the mountain, where there was no place to hide, but only silence and solitude. In the moments that we sit in an empty church or go on a silent retreat, hike a mountain, or like Elijah, hide out in a cave, it's then that we give space to hear God speaking to us in ways that we otherwise might not hear. When we rid ourselves of busyness, entertainment of all sorts, and the ordinary demands of our everyday lives, it's then that we leave space for God to enter in. So I'm going to urge us all this week to make intentional silence. Go someplace where you cannot hide. Turn off the music and the television. If you want to come spend time in the sanctuary here, let me know and we'll make it happen. But sit in the silence and listen for God. Sounds good, you say. But what if you don't hear God? What if it's God who is silent? As I was preparing this meditation, I happened to look on my bookshelf, and I realized just how many books I have on the topic of God being silent. I have experienced some silence in my life, as I suspect many of you have as well. My bookshelves are now filled with the book called When God is Silent by Barbara Brown Taylor. I have one by Renita Weems called Listening for God, A Minister's Journey Through Silence and Doubt. I have one by Sue Monk Kidd called When the Heart Waits. And the list goes on. The Psalms, which cry out at the silence of God, there's a lot of them. In utmost misery, Job, despite feeling God's presence, also felt God's silence. Even Mother Teresa in her writings expressed her anguish at God's absence, which lasted for decades. She wrote in a letter, "Even deep down, there is nothing but emptiness and darkness. It pains without ceasing." On Maundy Thursday, in here, as we strip the altar, we will again read those haunting words of Jesus from Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me?" Even the Son of God has felt the silence of God. Silence with God can be hard. It can raise doubts. It can make us crazy. But it is so important to know that when there is silence, it is not because we have failed in our prayer life or our faithfulness. It does not mean that God is not with us. As there are seasons of our lives, Renita Weems calls these seasons of silence. She says, as with most great communicators, God knows that the point of silence and the pause between sentences is not to give the audience the chance to fill the sentence with empty babbling, like we frequently want to do, but to help create more depth to the conversation. Mother Teresa found these seasons of silence to be the times when she could relate more closely amongst the poor to whom she ministered. Haverkamp says pain and abandonment are not feelings that can separate us from God or even from other human beings, because they are feelings that we share. Christ's suffering and death led to resurrection. God answered Job in a whirlwind. Mother Teresa is now Saint Teresa, and her times of doubt and darkness provide comfort and hope now for others. The Psalms, which lament God's silence, all of them end with hope and confidence. In the words of Lamentations, "The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord."